This is the Frogcast.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to the Frogcast. Here we are in the middle of the week getting ready to host the Oklahoma Sooners this Saturday, 4 o'clock. And we are excited to welcome one of the best voices in college football, especially for the Big 12 and Oklahoma. Alan Kenny of Sooner Sports Radio and of BlatantHomerism.com is with us here tonight to talk about Oklahoma, Oklahoma TCU, and the Big 12. Alan, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
You guys, man, you're way too kind, man. That's way too kind of an intro, man. Thank you all for having me on.
Well, you might not be saying that by the time it's over. So
fair enough.
Yeah, I do like to make a little plug for you that your handle is Blatant Homerism, but you are one of the most level-headed fans that I come across on Twitter. And I know that's not quite a level-headed crowd, but I do appreciate your work, and we appreciate you being on here with us.
Oh, well, thank you. That's awfully kind of you, man.
Well, we have watched Oklahoma from afar, both opening weekend against against Houston, as well as last weekend, or 2 weekends ago against Ohio State. You got ULM stuck in the middle there. What's it like being a Sooner fan, being 1-2 at this point in the season, especially after expectations were so high? Walk us through what's gone on with Oklahoma in the first few weeks of this season.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, I didn't expect Oklahoma to be 1-2 at this point. I mean, obviously, it was certainly out there. You know, but looking at it, for me at least, you know, this team isn't that different from what I saw heading into the season. You know, I am surprised how much, you know, they've struggled at the cornerback position. That has surprised me. And I've also been surprised that we've seen Baker Mayfield really kind of, it feels like, just kind of either, you know, pressing or trying to make too many big plays. But I felt like offensively, the decisions that he's made in a couple spots, not even with necessarily with turnovers, but just passing on checkdowns, trying to go for big plays that really weren't there. That has you know, surprised me, because what I saw last year from him was, you know, he did a nice job, I felt like, of staying within himself. Hasn't been the case so far this year, and if they don't get that figured out, they're going to have a lot more of these you know, kind of mistake filled games where they're not quite good enough to play real sloppy and still win.
You know, I remember last year, all the way up to the game in Dallas, where of course I got beat by Texas. Everybody was so excited about Lincoln Riley coming in as the offensive coordinator, but there were so many questions about his ability to get the ball into the hands of the people that could do the most damage. And when you just, you would just go look anecdotally at the carries that Pirine and Mixon got, especially in that Houston game. What's your take on Lincoln Riley and the way that he has settled in, or does he shoulder any of the blame this season for the state of the Sooner offense?
Oh, I think he absolutely does. You know, I mean, to his credit, you know, excuse me, sorry, guys. To Lincoln's credit, you know, I feel like looking at it, the offense is moving the ball, you know, kind of better, you know, it hasn't been terrible by any stretch. It's really been pretty good. But again, a lot of the times there are those, you know, kind of backbreakers, like I mentioned, the mistakes. But you're right in the sense that, you know, Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon need to have the ball in their hands more. And I think in some cases, Riley would say that circumstances dictated that they couldn't run as much as they'd like to, you know, getting behind by a couple scores against Houston, for example. But at the same time, it does feel like they've kind of gotten away from maybe what the strength of the offense should be. I would look for that to kind of correct itself going forward, and that would also take, I think, some of the heat off of Mayfield as well, if the ball's in their hands more often.
I think every Big 12 fan loved Sterling Shepard. I mean, loved Shepard. I thought he was a great player for the Sooners. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember Bosworth and his dad playing together and all that stuff. But who has stepped up at wide receiver that you are excited about in the OU offense? Or who needs to step up going forward to replace that big playmaker?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, it's probably part of the reason why the offense has struggled so much, because Shepard did such a great job of getting open. You know, he was, you know, very explosive with the ball in his hands. I mean, you look at the NFL right now, he might be the best rookie wide receiver out there, just in terms of what we've seen so far this year. And that's a pretty stacked group. You know, in terms of who is stepping up, I mean, Mark Andrews, you know, the big kind of tight end slash wide receiver, he's making a lot of plays for them. He's been a big play threat. You know, you'll hear some people kind of complain about his hands not being necessarily, you know, the kind of guy who's just a sure thing every time. But for the amount of plays he's made for OU this year, it's kind of hard to argue with that, with what he's done so far. A guy to watch on the outside, A.D. Miller, kind of a long, lanky guy. He really looks the part. He had a nice touchdown catch against Ohio State. I've been kind of waiting for him to see more targets and more catches, and it seems like that's starting to pick up. Now, and of course, D.D. Westbrook is a guy who last year was, you know, kind of the number two to, you know, Sterling Shepard's number one option. And he's still, you know, very, very strong player, really good, you know, in the screen game. The OU started using him more on some jet sweeps. So he's got to watch out for. And then there's last one would be there's a freshman, Mykel Jones. He's a, you know, blue chip guy out of Louisiana, more of a slot receiver. He's really dynamic with the ball in his hands. You know, receiver's just one of those positions, though, where I think that they hesitate to necessarily put freshmen out there too early because, you know, you run the wrong route, and it's pretty easy for that ball to be six going the other way.
Yeah, it is pretty easy for that to happen. you know, old Frog fans like me are going to remember the first 4 or 5 years of Gary Patterson's offense. We were winning a lot of games, but nobody liked the offensive coordinator, a guy by the name of Mike Schultz. He was eventually replaced by, of all people, Justin Fuente. I feel that way about watching Sooner fans respond to Mike Stoops. What is kind of the state of the Sooner fan base with Bob's brother back running the defense here? It's been his defense for a while again. Well, what's your take on Mike Stoops running the Sooner defense this year?
Yeah, I mean, Mike has certainly been the target of a lot of fans' ire. You know, and it's kind of it's a situation that just is begging for that, given that he's, you know, related to the head coach. And, you know, you have a defensive coordinator who ended up moving to Clemson and Brent Venables, who's now, you know, overseeing some of the best defenses in the country year in, year out. You know, Mike, obviously the transition has been tougher. You know, I think that in a lot of ways, Mike is kind of paying for Bob Stoops' sins from, you know, a few years back. I think that recruiting got really kind of out of whack under him. I think that, he made some poor hires on his staff. And, you know, the number of guys that they were signing on defense, I mean, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I've written about it before. They got just so far skewed towards the offense because of, you know, needing to bring in more receivers to run, you know, the 4 and 5 wide sets, and the number of guys they had washing out on that side of the ball, and then really just not bringing in very good talent on the, you know, on the defensive side. You know, so I think that Mike's kind of been for a while trying to just kind of bail everything together, you know, with doing the best he can with what he's got available to him. I think the recruiting is finally stabilizing on that side. He's also made a scheme change going to a 3-4, which, you know, is not the kind of thing that people have a lot of patience for necessarily, to say, oh, we're going to give this a couple years to get it figured out. You know, I think that Mike is as much a victim of circumstance as anything, but good luck convincing fans of that.
Rational, calm fans with low expectations and a lot of patience. That'll
clearly.
Yeah, that'll go over well. Well, the matchup this Saturday, I think a lot of TCU fans about a month ago thought this is going to be two top 10 teams. We're going to be fighting for College Game Day. This is going to be the marquee game of the weekend. And, you know, between Oklahoma's two losses and of course, TCU's double overtime loss to Arkansas, you know, some of the shine has been knocked off it. But when you get Oklahoma, when you're hosting Oklahoma, it's a big deal. And regardless of Oklahoma's record, the Big 12's title is still going to run through Norman. So what do you see in terms of a matchup between Oklahoma and TCU this weekend? What do you think we can expect in a game this week?
Well, I mean, just based on what I've seen so far, you know, spread offenses are very, very good at finding that weak link on the defense and attacking it. And so TCU is, I'm sure, going to go after the cornerback spot opposite of Jordan Thomas. So far, it's been a little bit of a revolving door there. They started senior Dakota Austin the first game of the year. They've tried to move in freshman Parrish Cobb, really highly touted guy. But, I mean, he's a freshman. He's not, you know, he's really having
Was he one of the Baylor? Was he one of the guys that was?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's another thing, too. That's, I mean, he came in the middle of the summer as opposed to the beginning. So he's still kind of getting up to speed there. They've also got Micaiah Quick, a guy who's been a receiver, who was a receiver for his first couple of years there in Norman, but, you know, is probably better suited to cornerback. So they've been working him in there, too. But I got to think that Doug Meacham and Sonny Dykes will try their best to isolate you know, the matchup there on the outside, you know, work those fade routes, try and make something happen there. Now, if you know, presumably Kerry Cooks, Mike Stoops have been working on getting that position shored up or finding ways around that, maybe with a little bit more safety help than the spot has been getting. But, you know, the other thing that stands out to me watching TCU defensively is from Oklahoma's standpoint on defense, the way that Kenny Hill runs the ball, of course. I mean, you know, they clear out the field for him really well with so many of those spread sets and give him a chance to do some damage with his legs. And, I mean, he can move. We see it time and again. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of just, you know, the bugaboo of these spread offenses in general. I mean, there's so many kind of pick your poison decisions here, and Oklahoma can't necessarily, allocate too many resources to those receivers on the outside when, you know, the potential for Hill to run a draw there against, you know, empty middle of the field is, you know, so high.
Yeah, I think that's been the pleasant surprise as a TCU fan is Hill. You know, everybody said he was mobile, he was quick every now and then, but he's racked up some yards with his legs at key times. So I agree with you. I think they're going to find a way to spread the field, you know, send some people down the field, send some folks on a crossing pattern, and all of a sudden he's going to be 13 yards down the field sliding for a first down. So I would not be surprised to see that more than a few times this weekend. Looking around the rest of the Big 12, what's your take on what we have done on the field? You know, we've had some significant out of conference losses. You know, that Notre Dame loss and Texas win at the first weekend of the year wasn't quite what you thought it would be. And West Virginia's got a pretty good record and two good wins, and they don't seem to be getting any respect. What's your summary of the state of the Big 12 going into this weekend?
You know, it's kind of, there's a thing in college football, you know, where, you know, in no sport does your record seem to really matter more and at the same time tell you less necessarily about a team. I mean, for example, look at TCU. You could say, oh, well, they, you know, they lost to Arkansas at home, you know, bad, that for export on the Big 12. And that's true. But I mean, it was a double overtime loss. So, you know, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like a blowout. Now, you know, Oklahoma getting hammered by Ohio State, obviously that's not as good. You know, Texas losing to Cal, even though that was a closer game, I don't think a whole lot of Cal at this point. So, I mean, again, that doesn't reflect well. Oklahoma State just lost to a team that lost to Virginia, of all people. You know, I can kind of go down the list. And, of course, you know, there at the bottom, I mean, Kansas and Iowa State just look so bad. You know, it really has not it's not a case, I think, in this, you know, at this point where, oh, everybody's just piling on the Big 12. It's not like that. I mean, it really has not been – a good start to the season for the Big 12. And, you know, there aren't going to be any opportunities going the rest of the way to make up for that. I mean, now we're all in conference play, so.
Yeah, we're all in conference play. There, you know, we know personally that you've got to – if everybody's got one loss, we're going to be the team out because of the title game. And so you're sitting around – you know, I don't want to, like, lose sleep over the state of the Big 12 getting into the playoff because the Big 10 was separated – was told they're not going to make the playoff at this point in 2014. But we don't have an Ohio State that's going to be able to come back. So it doesn't look good. That's just my –
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing positive to kind of hang your hat on. And I'm sorry, Pokes, but beating Pitt is not just – what I'm, you know, all worked up about. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a big fan of West Virginia. I don't know that they're going to do any damage in the Big 12 because they've had a really good out of conference basically their entire time in the Big 12, and then found a way to always go 4-5 in the Big 12. But I'll be curious to see what they can do because I think BYU is pretty salty no matter what their record is, and mm-hmm. being able to get a win over Missouri. We all know that that's, you know, that's an SEC team, but it's still an old Big 12 team. But that's a good mm-hmm. win. We'll take that. So
yeah. Yeah, and Skylar Howard is playing better at quarterback than I expected. You know, he's a guy that who's been pretty erratic, I think, for Dana Holgorsen his first year as a starter. But this year he seems to have settled in some. And, you know, they're very well coached on defense. You know, they're Tony Gibson, the defensive coordinator. They lost so much from last year's defense. I'm going to be interested when they go up against some of these offenses that, you know, the Big 12 sports. But, no, I mean, you know, they've certainly had a good start to the year. And, you know, I think you'll also – you have to watch out for Kansas State also. Personally, I think they might have the best defense in the conference at this point. And, you know, stuff like going on the road and playing Stanford so tough, you know, yeah, it's not a win, but it does speak well of the program.
It does. I was watching that game. That was a I got worried watching Kansas State play that game. So I know a lot of other Big 12 fans will take a big, deep breath when they realize Kansas State is going to all of a sudden sneak into 9 wins, and they're probably going to be one of the losses when they play them. So
yeah.
I would not be surprised. I would not bet against that.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you there.
Well, this kind of summarizes the state of the conference. We've talked up to this point about what's going on the field, and we might spend the rest of the podcast even longer talking about what's going on off the field because it's like sand through the hourglass with this conference. Right before we came on, we had some news that broke, and Daniel, who's here with me, is gonna kick off the first one. We've got a handful of other things that we want to talk about the state of the Big 12 off the field as a conference. Daniel, what's the thing you saw on Twitter that you wanted to get Alan to share with us about as soon as we were coming on to record?
Okay, yeah. So right before we got on to record, I see the kind of message boards and Twitter that big Oklahoma State mega booster T-Boone Pickens has made comments on Oklahoma's David Boren, saying that he likes to talk a lot and that he sometimes get confused. So I'm wondering, what exactly does that mean? Is he right? Is he the one that's confused? and like, what kind of, I mean, does that change anything? What are we looking at with that there?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a shock to anyone that David Boren likes to talk a lot. I mean, I don't think that Boone Pickens is wrong about that. I mean, goodness, he's never met a mic he didn't like from what I've seen. But, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, in terms of Boone, you know, going off on Boren there, to me, that's just kind of Boone Pickens being Boone Pickens. I mean, the guy's got billions of dollars. I mean, you know, people, they, you know, that rich when they hit a certain age, man, even before then, I mean, they don't care.
They don't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he'll say what he wants. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, when Boone endorsed Donald Trump a couple months back, I remember him saying, well, it seems like we just need a different kind of person in there in the White House, some, you know, for some change. And you know what? If it doesn't go well, I'll be dead. So, I mean, that's literally what he said. I mean, so Boone's working on he's working on a pretty short time frame here. So I think that, you know, I mean, he's to the point where he just doesn't care. You know, I mean, I don't see that having any impact on the relationship between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, or see that as like a dig or some you know, some sign. Oh no, maybe you know, David Boren has Alzheimer's or something. I mean, no, it's nothing like that.
So, like, does that mean like does that reveal anything as far as what's going on between, are we going to expand, are we not going to expand? Because, you know, he's kind of blowing him off because they came out saying, you know, oh, we're going to expand. And now it's like, oh, no, we're not going to expand. And then they said even later, well, we don't have an answer or something like that. So I didn't know if that shed any light on anything like rumor wise or anything.
No, I mean, there's nothing that. You know, I mean, Boone is actually, you know, very, very influential around the Big 12, even more than you'd imagine. I think when you look at, I mean, you know, everybody knows about all the money that he's given to, you know, Oklahoma State, but he's done a lot there in the state of Texas as well. You know, donations, whatnot. I mean, he's just a, you know, he's a power broker. I don't think there's any way around that. So when he, you know, his opinion is definitely, I mean, taken into account, I think, by everyone. But, I mean, at the same time, ultimately, he's got the most stroke at Oklahoma State. And, you know, Oklahoma State isn't exactly the kind of, you know, school that's going to necessarily be a hot commodity if the Big 12 were to fall apart. So they're not exactly he's, you know, coming from a position of strength, I guess, in that sense. You know, I mean, I don't think what Boone Pickens says, you know, I think that at this point, the conference expanding to me looks like it's very much, you know, kind of on life support. And I don't think that, you know, Boone Pickens saying anything about that changes that or, you know, tells me anything one way or the other.
You know, I listened to the podcast you had with Dan Wolkin. I think it was the day of the Big 12 Media Days, the very last one, when Boldsby had the conference call, and they basically announced that they were going to get serious about expansion. We should expect some steps here in the next month or so. You know, I got two questions for you, because I'm really curious on your opinion on this. What happened that day, in your opinion, that made them jump so fast into wanting to expand when basically the day before, guys like George Schroeder and, you know, Dan Wolkin were saying there's no movement to be able to expand. What created that urgency for them to go public, and how big of a pushback do you think it would have taken or internal issues in order for them to basically, I think I agree with you, I think they're on the edge of eating their words and announcing they're not going to expand, which is the equivalent of going into hospice as a conference, as far as I'm concerned. What's your take on those two situations and how they're connected, and what in your professional opinion, what caused all of that?
Wow. Well, you know, I'm not really a professional, but
your unprofessional opinion.
I try to look at these, you know, and read the tea leaves. I mean, I almost look at it in a lot of ways as a game theory type of situation. You know, I think that for a long time, the Big 12 kind of held out hope that when the next round of media deals comes up, you know, something else would happen. I mean, the ACC might get a few teams picked off by the Big Ten or the SEC, and the ACC and Big 12 could do some type of merger, or maybe, you know, something along those lines. But I think the two things happened though, that, like right on the eve of that day, that changed things, and that would be, you know, the ACC signed a longer term extension grant of rights with ESPN and, you know, was given its own network. Those two things in concert, I mean, you know, pretty much it was the ACC drawing a line in the sand and saying, you know, I mean, or saying, you know, we're all throwing in our lots together. I mean, there's not going to be the Big Ten isn't going to take a team away from there now. The SEC won't be able to pull any teams away from the ACC. That leaves the Big 12 as the most exposed. So, you know, at that point, you know, I was wondering, I mean, you know, I think that there was still in some way some, you know, hope that maybe there might be some type of conference network that could be kind of scraped together out of everything, maybe through like a digital type agreement, or, you know, maybe, you know, a chance to grab a lot of cash before the league fell apart in 2000. I believe the grant of rights is up for the Big 12 in 2025. You know, you're probably looking, if that's the case, at, you know, a window probably in the early 2000s when fiscally, it might make sense for some schools at that point if they wanted to break away. So, I mean, I think that it was just kind of that realization, you know. And I mean, I don't know if they acted, if they were maybe kind of just irritated with ESPN for, you know, giving the ACC, making the ACC network a reality when they had probably been told that the money wasn't necessarily there for more conference networks. You know, I don't really know. I mean, it felt to me like a money grab more than anything else.
That sounds about right. And since it's on the edge of being dead here, you don't have to pontificate too long on this, but I'm really curious, in a strong paragraph, what's going to happen to the Big 12 in 2025?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably what ends up happening is something like maybe Texas and, well, gosh, I don't know. I think maybe Oklahoma and Oklahoma State might end up going, for example, to the SEC. You might have Texas leading a group out to the ACC. I'm not sure. I tend to think that Texas's deal with the Longhorn Network might be a little bit harder for the Longhorns to get out of than people realize. Because the thing to keep in mind about all this, I realize that, and you asked for a paragraph, but
I'm interested.
The way I look at it, I mean, Texas, ESPN gave Texas the Longhorn Network for a reason, and that was to keep Texas from going somewhere where ESPN wouldn't have control. You look at, Fox is a equity partner in the Big Ten Network. The Pac-12 is completely on its own with its network, and you know, Texas going out there and leading that kind of blockade of Big 12 schools out there would have been really kind of strengthened, I think, the Pac-12's media offering. ESPN is not in the business of promoting competition, I think that ESPN would do what it could probably to keep Texas out of the Big Ten or Pac-12 just based on how ESPN has acted in the past. So, you know, I think at that point you're looking more at something like the ACC for Texas. But you never know; they could figure out a way to spring free, and maybe Texas and Kansas go to the Big Ten, or maybe it's OU and Kansas that go to the Big Ten. I don't know. I do think that the bigger brands at that point are going to at some point break away.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't have any. I had a sliver of hope about a long-term Big 12. I had a sliver of hope about a couple of those teams breaking free, whether from the ACC or even from the Pac-12. You know, I know they're just newspaper articles, but I've heard Arizona schools might be interested in something like that. You know, you always hear the rumor about Colorado fans, et cetera. But yeah, I just think it's going to be over with.
yeah. You know, I mean, People speculated all different kinds of ways about what David Bourne's been up to this whole time. But I mean, I do think, you know, part of what he was trying to do was, you know, set the league up to a point where it would be more attractive if that were to happen, or at least put that option on the table and see if it could be worked towards. And I don't get the impression that anyone thinks that's reasonable at this point.
No, I agree with you. I don't see that at all. Unfortunately, I don't see that at all. So, yeah. I hold to the hope that I remember Chuck Ninus going on game day in late September of 2011 and saying they were not going to add any more schools to the Big 12 from Texas. And then, like, nine drinks later with Del Conte and DeLoss Dodds, we got invited, like, 4 days later. So just because something gets said doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It doesn't mean it's going to happen or not happen. So I'm holding out hope that we're going to at least be in a spot where we can continue to be competitive as TCU fans. So,
yeah. I mean, that's the part that about all this that, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, programs like TCU or Kansas State or, you know, Iowa State that – have invested a lot in athletics and made a commitment. You know, if they do somehow end up getting shut out, that would be really unfortunate.
Yeah, and the frustration of that is with conference leadership, because you know we don't have to pretend like we're the largest state school in the world with, you know, a million alumni. But damn it, if Purdue and Boston College and Wake Forest and Indiana, like I could go on and on about all these teams just, you know, because of where they were in 1926 is where why they're okay right now. That's the kind of stuff that I get ticked off about. I don't get ticked off that we're a small private school. I get ticked off that all these other small private schools are in great shape because their conference leadership knew how to secure a future, which we haven't been able to seem to be able to do. And that's the part that ticked me off.
Yeah.
Well, Alan, before we let you go here, I'm going to put you on the hot seat. Tell me what you see this Saturday. Give me a final score. Give me a prediction with the Frogs and the Sooners. You're not going to hurt my feelings. I'm really curious.
I haven't even, man. You know, I've been back and forth a lot on this. You know, I think that TCU has some problems defensively that I didn't expect to see.
None of us did. That has been the biggest disappointment this entire season.
Yeah, which I mean, and it's really surprised me. You know, and I think that, you know, in a certain sense, I think probably public perception of Oklahoma has probably gone a little bit too far towards the negative. I mean, you know, I look at Houston and Ohio State and see, you know, two of the top maybe seven or eight teams in the country. So, you know, I mean, that's not exactly necessarily indicative of Oklahoma maybe being a really bad team or that much worse than anyone expected. So, I mean, I look at this. The other thing is Kenny Hill. You know, I mean, as much as his legs scare me, he's prone to making those mistakes, those bad throws, bad decisions. I think that Oklahoma will make just one or two more plays than TCU. You know, I think that Mixon and P. Ryan will get the ball a little bit more than they have, which, you know, is, you know, kind of hits at the, you know, one of the bigger problems TCU's defense. They're stopping the run. My guess is that Oklahoma makes just one or two more plays and ends up pulling this one out.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see what our – my biggest questions all season with Patterson has been personnel and game situation. And, you know, again, we had Sammy Douglas and Ty Summers at linebacker that played so well against Arkansas and actually did everything they were asked to do to stop the run, in my opinion. And then Sammy Douglas barely plays the next two games. So yeah. I'm curious to see if we go big at linebacker again, which we're going to have to do. We can't have those hybrid strong safeties stepping up to play linebacker against P. Ryan. So yeah. I'll be curious to see what the personnel is because – Ty Summers can cover the flats pretty well, but Sammy Douglas needs to be in there dropping the hammer on the run, and we'll see if Lincoln Riley's able to exploit that because there's things that he can work with and work against in that situation, and I think that's going to be the key. Can our big linebackers stop the run? Because I think we're going to see the big guys in there, but are they going to be able to step back as well if Mayfield has a play breakdown and uses his legs the way Kenny Hill can? I think that's where the damage could be done.
Yeah, and keeping Mayfield keeping him reined in, Lincoln Riley, that's something that, you know, I'm sure they've been working on a lot the past 2 weeks, so.
Yeah. Well, we will find out this Saturday at the weirdest kickoff time I've ever seen. I have not seen a 4:00 kickoff ever, so.
Very, very strange. I mean, I guess it's nice that it'll probably be over around the time that Louisville and Clemson are kicking off, but, you know, at 5:00, not normal.
Yeah, that's a weird kickoff time. That is a weird kickoff. Well, hopefully there's no weird weather. We've had enough weird weather in the Big 12 from the Oklahoma, Ohio State game, the Pitt OSU game. Hopefully we don't have any more weird weather. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Alan, thank you so much for coming on. Before we let you go, tell us where we can find you at, where folks can track you down on Twitter, where they can find your website and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, you can find me on Twitter at Blatant Homerism. You can find my work online at blatanthomerism.com. You know, happy to always talk football with the wonderful people of TCU who are some of the most knowledgeable fans around in Big 12 country. So make sure to hit me up if you're listening to this and want to talk football.
All right. Thank you so much, Alan. We appreciate you being with us tonight.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Alan Kenny, thanks for being on. For Daniel, I'm Jeff Mitchell. Thank you for listening to the Frogcast.